enjoy spending ages in the car on the back seat with nothing to do? Who really looks forward to those long journeys? Talia, what do you do on those long journeys? Sleep. I thought you might be knitting. Maybe you need another really long journey just to carry on with the blanket. Sleeping is a nice thing. Any other takers? Anyone else really love a long car journey? We had a couple of years where for our summer holiday, we spent 2 days driving to the south of France, which I don't think could have been much fun at all for the kids sat in the back with pillows and bags and packed lunches and broken crisps and everything around them. But long car journeys I used to find terribly boring. And in the olden days, as a family, we only had 2 games that we played on a long car journey. You might be able to guess what they were if you're a similar generation to me. The classic games in my day were I Spy and Scrabble in a car. What sort of craziness is that? Sheffer? Was there only what, sorry? Oh, Connect Four. No, it was much more basic than that. We had I Spy or Guess Who. I Spy or Guess Who were the 2 classic games. You can imagine how riveting a car journey was. You almost never wanted it to stop. You were having so much fun playing these games. You had 20 questions. And you had to guess the identity of the person that someone else had thought of in those 20 questions. But it's so much fun, that game, that they made a physical game out of it. So who has played this game? A Friday Club, young people's classic, Guess Who the board game. Many, many evenings could be spent playing this, and the characters may have changed, but the questions are still the same. Can anyone remember what was your opening question when you played this game? What was the first question that you had asked to cut down the choices by half immediately? Janice, is it a boy or girl? Absolutely. You can only ask one of those. Is it a boy? Yep. So you ask that, half the people are cleared out straight away. Other good questions? Anyone else remember any good questions? Yeah, Talia. Is it bald? Yeah. Now look around this morning. No. But, or do they have brown hair? Because there'd be blonde hair, brown hair, ginger hair, no hair, a white hair as well, wasn't there? So you could get rid of quite a few by hair colour. Jamie? Yes, do they have long hair or short hair or no hair or any tufts of hair or maybe lots of hair here or here? Any other good questions? Yes, Janice, I was looking at Dominic when I asked that question, and Lou and others, Roger, and lots of us. Glasses. Yeah, you could get rid of quite a few people with that question. Almost makes me want to play that game again. It was so much fun. But how do we know what God is like? Because we can't see him. And what questions would you ask if you had a suspicion on this game of in the car, the other person may have cheated a bit and gone for God? You know, sometimes we played it where you could choose cartoon characters, but I don't think we ever played it where you were allowed to choose God. But if a person had have chosen God for Guess Who, and you had a suspicion they might have done that, what question could you ask to think, might it be God? I don't want to waste one of my questions if it's not God, have a think. What question could you possibly ask which would perhaps narrow that down a bit? Laura? Are you, is the person perfect? That's a cunning question. But aren't there loads of people, Laura, who are perfect? You haven't met any in your time? Wrong circles of friends? No. That's a great question. Anything else which you might ask if you're suspicious that it could be God? Becca? Love this. Did he create the universe and everything that there is? Because it gets to the heart. No one else can say they've done that. You might say, are they a good person? Well, you know, all of that. So, thankfully, we don't have to guess what God is like, do we? And we don't have to imagine what God is like, because he's revealed himself to us. He's explained what he's like in here. I seem to now have three copies of the same book at the front. But in the Bible, we have God's revelation of himself. We have everything we need to know about what God is like in the Bible. And you might know the Bible uses many words to describe what God is like. We've had perhaps one or two already. He's perfect. He's the creator. Anyone else think of other words to describe what God is like? Jerry. Oh, Jerry, your voice is very deep suddenly. Jerry, what were you going to say? He's what, sorry? Omniscient. Wow, that's a long word. He's all-knowing. He knows everything. John, behind you, what was your one, John? He's eternal, yes. Alistair.
I've got one. Has he got a son called Jesus?
Has he got a son called Jesus? I mean, there might be, yeah, in Latin America, there's a lot of dads there with sons called Jesus, I think. Quite a popular name there, but less so in England. Anything else which describes God's character from the Bible? Well, there's lots of words, so I'm going to help you out because everyone's struggling a bit this morning. You've got lots of different words there which describe what God is like. He's holy and pure. He's powerful. He's faithful. He's wise. He's just, which means he always does what is right. He's majestic. He's true. He's eternal. I'm not reading this round. He's spirit and he's light. All of these describe what God is like, and they describe what he's like all of the time. Because when we describe somebody, we might say, oh, Freya's a very happy person, or so-and-so is a very loving and caring person. And what we mean by that is, most of the time, that's what they're like, isn't it? Most of the time they're very loving, most of the time they're very caring, most of the time they're very loving. But are they like that all the time? Well, if they're anything like me, it might be true of them some of the time, but not all of the time. But God is like these things all of the time. He's unchanging. We can be sometimes kind, but other times we're selfish. Sometimes we can be faithful, but other times we break our promises. Sometimes we're caring, and other times we're selfish. But God is like this all of the time. And more. Now, back to our reading. Was anyone paying attention to our reading? Did anyone spot the word that describes God in our reading this morning? Now, there's been a bit of a clue running through our service. So hopefully you've all got a fairly good idea of the word we're going for. So God is love, verse 8 of our reading from earlier. John writes, God is love. Now, that seems a bit unusual to me, because I would have expected John to write, God is loving, meaning that he is caring, that he's compassionate, that he's loving towards people. Because that's what we'd say, they're a very loving person, meaning they're caring, they're affectionate. But God isn't just described as being loving, but God is love. Have a little think in your mind how that is different to saying God is loving. God is love. It's about God's essential character. This is 100% what God is like. This is describes him. So I want to ask you this morning, is that how you think about God today? Is that how you imagine God and think of God and know God to be? Is God love to you? And if so, what difference does it make to your life? What difference is it making for the week ahead when you think about that God is love? What difference is that going to make to the sort of person you are knowing what God is like? Now, young people, I want to speak, if I can, to the older ones for a moment. And are you willing just to listen in? Because I think the older ones sometimes struggle with this idea. And you young ones, you may have to help some of the older ones to understand this concept. Because some people, when they hear that God is love, as they get older, sometimes they misunderstand what that means. And you young ones may have met people who misunderstand it in these ways. Somebody might say to themselves, well, if God is love, he's going to simply forgive everyone. Or if God is love, it doesn't matter what I do because God's going to love me all the same anyway. Or if God is love, well, he's just for softies then who don't feel complete in themselves. Now, you might have met people who think like that. You might have encountered one of your friends. There might be somebody in your family who thinks a bit like that. You might be able to think how you'd be able to set them straight if they do think that. But for other people, they may really want to grasp. They may really want to know for themselves that God is love. But they struggle with it. They struggle to grasp that for themselves. And there might be many reasons for that. Sometimes people have been let down by others themselves. They've been let down and they haven't been loved by other people. And therefore for them to know that God is love is difficult. Or perhaps that person doesn't love themselves very much. So the idea of God loving them seems impossible. Or because of the mistakes or regrets that they've had, they might think, well, how could God possibly love me? Perhaps you know someone like that. So what would you say to them? What would you say to somebody who had one of those different thoughts? Perhaps you've thought that yourself. Could God really love me? Well, some of the people John was writing to, they would have had the same thoughts and questions. What does it mean that God is love? How do I know it's true? And what difference should it make to my life? So John answers that question which they may have had. And this is what Ellie read. This is how God showed his love among us. He sent his one and only Son into the world that we might live through him. This is love, not that we love God, but that he loved us and sent his Son as an atoning sacrifice for our sin. Like we saw in the video, God's love is agape love. It's love which is much more than a feeling. It's much stronger and more active than that. God's love is him choosing to love, choosing to act in love towards individuals who might be unlovely. Individuals like you and me. Individuals who sometimes don't love him. Individuals who weren't looking for him. People who've made mistakes. People who've got regrets. People who've been let down by other people. Or who even feel they don't need or want to know God. Now, we often think of love as a feeling, don't we? Valentine's Day is always, it seems, about feelings. How do you feel towards somebody else? And often our feelings change, don't they? We love somebody because of how they respond to us. But God's love isn't like that. God's agape love isn't a feeling because of what we're like. And it doesn't change. It's a deliberate choice God has made to act in love. And it starts with Him choosing to do that. So this is love, John says, not that we love God, but that He loved us. But you might say, well, how do I know God is love? I didn't feel it. I didn't feel God's love for me. I didn't have a warm feeling inside. Well, some of you have heard the expression, actions speak louder than words. Actions speak louder than words. So you can say something, but you've got to prove it, haven't you? You've got to back it up by the things that you do. And God has done that in history. God's love is active, it's costly, and it's sacrificial. And it's been seen in this historical act that God sent His Son as a sacrifice for our sins. That cost God. It was sacrificial for Him to do it. So if you ever doubt God's love for you, you only have to look to the cross. It's not about you. It's not about how good you are. It's not the things you've done which makes God love you. It's God acting, choosing deliberately to act in love and to sacrifice His Son, the most costly thing for Him, because of His love for you. It's not about how good you are, how lovely you are, or anything like that. It's God choosing deliberately to act in love. So how does it show us that He loves us? Because He's dealt with our biggest problem. He's dealt with our biggest problem. Who thinks about problems on Valentine's Day? It's all meant to be about warm, gushy feelings. But God sending His love, His Son in love, is to deal with our biggest problem, our sin, that barrier that separates us from Him. So if you ever doubt God's love for you, you look to the cross. You look to see what it cost God to love you. And when we know that God loves us, our love for Him will then grow as we look to the cross and we become more like Him. It means that we then love other people because God's image is being made in us. So as we grow in our love for God, we will grow in our love for one another and even for those people who we find irritating, frustrating, who are our enemies. That is God's image being made in us. In a moment, Dominic's going to lead us as we share communion together, which is a feast of celebration of God's love for us.